We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. Willie Donick, I'm sure, chewing all of his fingernails. His son's team is tied in the top of the ninth in the D3 baseball championship game. We hope Denison pulls it out. In the meantime, let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend, NHL insider extraordinaire for Sportsnet, Elliot Freeman, who is presented by Old National Bank and Green Ventures Landscaping. Elliot, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? I just finished doing a tailgating piece here in Carolina, where I was outside with Kevin Bieksa, and I borrowed Kyle Bukauskas' overalls.
Elliot, I attended the 2002 Stanley Cup Final between the Hurricanes and Red Wings, and the tailgating in Raleigh is second to none. It's a fabulous experience.
We had a bacon wrapped hot dog. Like, these people, they know what they're doing.
Absolutely. And we'll get to all of the fallout from the hiring of Chris McFarland in just a moment. But I have to ask you first about the report you dropped that blew up the internet a couple of hours ago. You reported on Sportsnet.ca that Red Wings captain Dylan Larkin has requested a trade from the organization. I'm sure as soon as you posted that, teams around the NHL were calling Steve Yzerman about Larkin's availability. Can you just give us some background on what led to this point, and what will it take for teams to actually acquire Dylan Larkin?
Sure. Well, basically what happened was, I think this has been brewing for a little bit. I've been working on this for a couple days, but nobody will say anything about it. And as you know, Adam, when you're dealing with stories like this, better be right. So it wasn't until today that I was 100% sure I was right. But like I said, I think it's been brewing. You know, Detroit hasn't made the playoffs in a while. You know, Larkin, as the captain and the number one center, has to take some blame for that. He's a key player on the team. But overall, I think, you know, he's 29 turning 30. I think it's getting to a point where he's like, okay, I want to win, and I want to win now. And I think for players like Larkin, who he won a silver medal last year in the Four Nations and a gold medal at the Olympics, I think it hasn't sated their desire to win the Stanley Cup. I think it's made it only more of a hunger. And, you know, the other thing, too, is, and I'm careful with this because neither one of them has spoken, but the relationship between Larkin and Yzerman hasn't always been easy. Larkin publicly said last year that they didn't do enough to help. This year, Yzerman made moves, and they still didn't get in. And I think, look, nobody said it, but I think people have been around the game long enough to know that, you know, Yzerman felt, I did help you guys this year, and you still didn't get in. And this is a league now where we saw Matthew Tkachuk a couple years ago say, look, I'm not going to re-sign in Calgary. He got traded to Florida, won two cups. And Quinn Hughes this year told Vancouver, I'm not going to re-sign there, too far away. Went to Minnesota, and even though they lost in the second round, they look like they're going to be a good team for a long time. And I think, you know, this is a league that's changing right now. It used to be if you demanded a trade, the teams had the power and said, you'll be traded at our time, our schedule, we'll decide when you get it. It's not that way anymore. And I think Larkin, seeing how those other situations have worked and that they're far away from the cup, I think he's decided now is his time.
Let's go back to yesterday with the Predators announcing Chris McFarland as the new president of hockey operations and GM. Also, congratulations to you, Elliot, that we don't have to ask you for updates every week anymore. But let's talk about the process that brought McFarland here. It sounded like it was almost a bidding war between Nashville and Colorado, which Nashville ultimately won in bringing McFarland here. You reported it's a six-year deal for McFarland. I'm not sure if you know the financials, but I'm curious how the deal McFarland received from the Predators compares to other people in his position around the NHL.
I'm still attempting to determine exactly that, to be honest, Adam. But, you know, I'll say this. Number one, I just think, I heard some of the comments about a bidding war. I don't know if far. I would just simply say that Nashville was willing to go to places that Colorado wasn't willing to go. And, you know, basically what I heard was when he met Bill Haslam for dinner, and I believe it was Monday night. I'm sorry, all the days are blending together right now. It was the night before it was hired, which I believe was Monday.
Yes.
I think Bill Haslam basically said, what's it going to take? And I think this got to a point where, now I think there were some guys that Nashville interviewed. I don't know how many, and I haven't spoken to any of them, but I did hear that there were some people who called on Tuesday and told, we've made our decision. And as I said on the pod, I think that the Predators decided they were not ending this search without taking a big run at either McFarland or Tulsky or both. And they'd already been rejected to speak to Tulsky. For all I know, they could have tried again after the season. I don't know. But I think they wanted the opportunity to speak to one, if not both of them. And I just think that that's what they were waiting for. And, you know, Chris McFarland in Colorado had Joe Sakic above him, franchise legend, ultimate decision maker in hockey there. And McFarland is the GM, even though he had a lot of say. Like, I don't think the Avalanche disrespected McFarland in any way, shape, or form. They believed in him. They promoted him to keep him away from Anaheim. But his pay in that position and his overall influence in that position was going to be limited by having Sakic there, and he wasn't going to be unseating him. Nashville now doesn't have that kind of a setup. You know, he's the guy at the top, which means that he got a significant raise, a sizable raise, and he's also got the big title. Ultimately, I think that's what did it. I think Nashville was willing to go to a place that Colorado wasn't willing to go. And, you know, I hate it when people say it's not about the money, because it is about the money, but it's also about he's the decision maker now. And that wasn't going to happen in Colorado.
This was Bill Haslam's first major decision, I would say, as Predators majority owner. And we talked to you throughout the season about how Haslam was sort of on a fact-finding mission to learn the ropes of being an NHL owner. I think a lot of fans around here consider this a feather in Haslam's cap, being able to lure McFarland from Colorado. How is the perception of Haslam as an owner around the NHL evolved since he took over that role? And what does this hire say to you about how he will run the Predators?
Well, the number one thing that impressed me most about Haslam in this process was there were people like, why are you taking so long? Like, what's going on here? Do you know what you're doing, basically? You know, Matt Marchese, who hosts our hockey show in the afternoons, he was calling it the conclave, and he looked up like the longest Pope decision in the history of the world, which was like 3 years. And he was like, every day, he's like, they're only 2 years, 240 days away from the record. And we were kind of laughing about it. But I said this to you guys, like, this is an important hire. You have to get it right. And I think everybody feels that they got it right. I don't know anybody who criticized this move. So the number one thing it tells me about Bill Haslam is if public opinion won't sway him if he thinks he's doing the right thing. And I think that's important. I think one of the most dangerous things for owners now is that, you know, social media gets hot or the public gets hot and you wilt. What he said to me is if he thinks that they're going to do something right, or it's going to take, or he has to make a decision that maybe people out front are mocking or anything, it's not going to faze him. And I would say this, I would want that in my owner if I was a fan, that, you know, who knows how this will all work out, but the process he made got him one of the best possible people available. And ultimately, that says to me that he ran a good process, and that's the most important thing.
Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet is with us. Elliot, a lot of us yesterday tried to pin McFarland down on what his first steps will be as Predators president of hockey operations and general manager, and he did what he probably should have. He did not give us too much. He said he needs to look under the hood and get to know the organization, but once that process happens, what do you think McFarland's first orders of business will be?
You know what? I think, first of all, you're going to meet with all your top players. I think you're going to meet with Yossi's of the world, the Forsbergs of the world, the O'Reillys of the world, the Stamkos's of the world. I mean, there were a lot of rumors about, you know, what your guys are willing to do or not willing to do. So you're going to sit down with all those guys and you're going to talk to them about how do you guys feel and where are we here? And I think right now they're probably nowhere with a lot of those guys. It's a new regime. They want to hear what McFarland has to say, what his plans are, how did he sell ownership on his vision. And then you're probably going to have some decision making there. You know, with Brunette, I have to say this, like, When they got Bednar and Patrick Waugh quit, I remember calling Chris McFarland about what he was going to do. And someone said to me, you have to ask him about Jared Bednar, because he had coached with him with Columbus and Bednar in the American Hockey League. And he said, that's going to be his guy. And I remember asking him about that. And he goes, that's a good name. And that's when I knew that Bednar had a good shot at that Colorado job. So I often look and say, okay, who's someone connected with? And they never moved on from Bednar. He always stayed there. And I know he's a big Bednar fan, and Bednar is going to coach Colorado next year. He's staying. So the reason I went with a long-winded story, Adam, is that if people are saying, well, he likes this one guy and Brunette could be in trouble, there's nobody like that for him. Like, there's nobody I look at and say, this is a coach he's going to want to bring in as soon as possible, especially since Bednar's staying. So I don't want to be pinned down to this because I just don't know. But if you told me that McFarland says, I'm going to keep Andrew Brunette and let him start next year and see how it goes, I don't think that's impossible. I don't think anybody should look at it and say, he's coming in.
Did we lose Elliot?
I think we lost Elliot. He put himself on mute. One of the two.
We'll get Elliot back in just a moment. What he was going to say is it would not surprise him if Andrew Brunette starts next season as head coach of the Predators, which we discussed yesterday.
And I think everyone leans toward, you know, seeing how he does at the beginning, and then that's when they possibly will make a change or not.
Yeah, I don't think it makes sense to make that change right now. Mm-hmm. I do think that you can start the season with Brunette and then go from there. All right, we do have Elliot Freeman back on the line. Elliot?
Yeah, sorry about that. No. So what I was just saying was that unless he hears some intel that says to him, you know, you can't do this, and I have no reason to believe there's anything like that right now, I can see a situation where he starts next year with Brunette, because there's no obvious guy he's attached to. Nobody.
We're talking with Elliot Freeman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. And we had that discussion yesterday, Elliot, about, you know, whether he was going to tackle the head coaching situation first or not. And we all came to a consensus is that's like one of the least of his problems at this particular moment. It's diving into the roster and seeing how it looks. But based upon that, what he was able to do with Colorado and how they operated that team, do you think he's leaning more toward, you know, going with the guys that are on this roster now or making some big moves either before the season or during the season?
Well, I think a lot of that, Derek, is going to depend on what the players say simply because a lot of them have clauses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get a handle on how your players feel. I thought it was interesting he brought up the mushy middle comment yesterday. I would like to ask him more about that when I get a chance to talk to him about it. You know, I'll say this. One thing, like, I have a decent relationship with Chris. I really do like talking to him. Colorado is one of the most secretive organizations in the NHL. It's like, sometimes it's like getting the nuclear codes to talk to some of those guys in there when he's there. But, you know, the thing about him is that he's, like, he recognizes talent, right? Like, Colorado knows what it's like when you have great players and you don't have great players. And he is smart enough that you don't win anything without having great players. And so, like, I think that ultimately, like, this is not a guy who's going to be like, oh, we're in the marshy middle. We have to trade Roman Josi and we have to restart. Like, that's not the way he's going to go in and think. He's going to be like, we have good players here and we have to build around them. I think one of the things, too, Derek, that Colorado did pretty well was, you know, they were always around the cap because of money that some of these guys' contracts have. They were very good at finding good players to fill roles. Some, like, bigger names, but also some smaller names. Like, they took a guy named Parker Kelly this year, and they turned him from a journeyman to a 20-goal scorer. Now, it's a good team, but they found a way to make him better than he's ever been. They took a guy named Sam Malinsky, who was like a 24-year-old college free agent, and they've turned him into a pretty good NHL defenseman. Like, Colorado's team had a good eye for that. And that'll be key for him, you know, whether it's him or the systems or setups he used, they've got to create that in Nashville. Just find players as well as they did there. And I've told you guys, people see Nashville as a destination. You will have the opportunity to attract people.
Now, talking about the NHL finals, we said before the finals, because there were a bunch of chatter, you know, coming from our way, no one wants to watch this game because it's the Hurricanes in Vegas and this and that. And our whole thing was, just watch it. It's going to be exciting. Just watch it. Turns out this game was very exciting. Went down to the last minutes. But the Carolina Hurricanes started off like no other. They scored two quick goals. After that, Vegas dominated the game. A lot of that was because of Hurricanes' undisciplined and sloppy play. Do you think they can overcome that?
I think the challenge here, Derek, is going to be like when they lost game one, 6-2 to Montreal, they won the next four. Mm-hmm. The first game, a lot of their mistakes were self-inflicted. I think the first game here, Vegas made, they exposed Carolina at times. Like, it was because of Vegas's great ability as opposed to Carolina's mistakes. I still think Carolina can win this series. I think Vegas is by far the best team that they've played. Like, Derek, when you played, was there a team that you played on where you felt like, okay, we're down 14-0 after the first quarter, it doesn't matter, we're still going to come back and beat these guys? Mm-hmm. Like, you must have played on teams like that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
That's what Vegas is like. Like, they are so good at, like, they're down 2-0 and they don't care. It's like, we've seen this before. We're down 3-0 to Colorado. We came back and beat them. No matter what happens, they think they're going to win. And that's a really difficult thing to beat. I just think the biggest difference is it's not only mistakes Carolina's made. Vegas is better than any team that Carolina's played so far to get them to create mistakes out of the way Carolina plays.
Elliot, one more for you. Did you have a vote for the Jack Adams Award?
No, I'm. It's kind of weird. I'm not a member of the Broadcasters Association. The Broadcasters Association is only for, like, play-by-play people and analysts.
Okay.
So I do not. I was talking about this today. Apparently, there were like 40 people who didn't vote. I'll say this: like, I'm no longer a member of the Professional Writers Association. I do have a vote still for most of the awards. When Frank Saravelli was there, he was very big into, if you don't vote, you never get to vote again.
Right.
And I think that should be the case. I think if you're given the opportunity to vote, then you should vote. And if you don't, you shouldn't be allowed to vote again. I think I don't like people who don't hand in ballots.
My question for you, Elliot, is John Cooper wins the Jack Adams Award, probably long deserved, his first Coach of the Year award. It was an incredibly tight vote between Cooper and Buffalo's Lindy Ruff. I've seen a lot of belly aching on social media. That's what happens on social media. There's a lot of belly aching about Lindy Ruff not winning the Jack Adams. Personally, I think Cooper was the right choice. What did you make of Cooper winning the award over Ruff in such a tight margin?
Well, I did get a DM from a Sabres fan who listens to our podcast who said this is all my fault.
Oh, okay.
Because all year long, you've been saying that Cooper and Bednar never win this award because they have the best teams, and it's for a coach who does the most surprising job, and guys who are consistently great should win it. And the Sabres fan said to me, and they were kind of funny about it, but it was like half joking. They're like, you cost Lindy Ruff the award this year because you kept on saying this on your podcast. I wrote back to the guy, said, if I had that kind of influence, I wouldn't be using it on NHL Coach of the Year awards. But you know what? Like, I don't get too worked up over this. Ruff would have been a great choice, but I do think we tend to overlook coaches who do the most over a long, consistent period of time.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, has been our guest on D-Mace Vin Ganadonic. He joins us every Thursday, and he is presented by Old National Bank and Green Ventures Landscaping. Elliot, as always, a pleasure. Get some more barbecue if you can. Enjoy game two.
All right, guys. Have yourselves a great night.
You as well. 615-737-1025. A score update for you in the D3 Baseball Championship game. Endicott and Dennison tied at 3 in the bottom of the 10th. Woo-hoo. Dennison is up to bat. Runner on first. No outs. A hit. It drops. First and second with no outs for Dennison.
Let's go.
Runners in scoring position for the Big Red as they attempt to win a national championship.
You need this more than anybody.
Willie needs this because it's his son.
I'm saying outside of Willie.
Oh, outside of Willie and the Donick family.
Exactly.
It needs to be me, so I'm not a jinx.
Exactly. I'll bring you a personal bottle of champagne tomorrow.
Thank you. Man, these games. Like, Willie is probably, he's probably on life support right now. Like, but we'll see what happens. 615-737-1025. We'll react to what Elliot had to say. I also do want to bring up a conversation I had with Derek off air regarding something about the Predators and how it compares to the Titans. We'll do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.